I've learned that death is not the end of the new flesh.
Long live the new flesh. I was hoping you'd be back.
Welcome to the New Flesh Podcast. My name is Brett Arnold at Brett Redacted on Twitter.
Joe Avella on Instagram.
And we are here today to talk about a couple movies that are new to streaming. We've watched them both. Puka, which is the latest in a series in the Hulu Blumhouse made-for-TV style movie anthology. The latest one is directed by Nacho Vigalondo, who we are fans of on this here podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, what else did we watch, Joe?
We also want to do The Devil May Take You, a Netflix film.
Yeah, May the Devil Take You.
What'd I say?
The Devil May Take You.
I'm sorry, one. May the Devil Take You. I'm so dumb. A currently on Netflix horror release, horror film from Indonesia that was released on August 2nd in Indonesia. I'm not exactly sure when it came on Netflix, but it's available now. And we watched it, and you know we got opinions.
Yes, and I talked about Satan's Slaves a few weeks ago, which was another Indonesian horror movie, so we'll talk about how they compare.
Great idea.
Yeah, we talked about, we watched both of those. I saw a couple award contenders this week that I might talk about.
The time of the year.
Yeah, it is that time of the year. I'm cramming. You know what? I just did, I looked at a release calendar of movies and wrote, literally just using my phone notepad, just wrote down the one I'd seen and started ranking them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen 101 movies this year that were not just movies that's just movies that were released in 2018.
Jesus.
I saw 101 and I made a second list of ones that I missed but would watch, and there's 36 of those. I think I did pretty good. I know. That's two a week.
Yeah, that sounds about right for you. I mean, it seems like you're more like three or four a week.
Well, yeah, then there's some weeks where I didn't go this week. There are weeks where I don't go at all, but it's because I've seen everything. And it's that time of the year, as you said, where everything's coming out for awards season. But then again, it's everything is held until Christmas. It's so stupid. So 15 movies will drop on Christmas Day. And then even though this week and last week, nothing new has opened at the box office that's meaningful besides
two questions.
Yeah,
two questions for Brett Arnold. One, I know you're Jewish. Did you growing up celebrate Hanukkah or Christmas?
Growing up, we celebrated Hanukkah.
So on Christmas, and that's usually not during Christmas, correct?
Right. Right now, it's actually the last day of Hanukkah today.
So you would get all the vacation time for Christmas, and you and your family are just we ain't doing shit.
Pretty much. I mean, a lot of the time Hanukkah corresponds to that time as well, but lately it's been earlier and earlier. I don't really understand why or how. We stopped celebrating Hanukkah pretty early in my family. I think probably after my sister's bat mitzvah, or maybe a little earlier, because I refused to continue going to Hebrew school and pretending I cared about the religious stuff. And my parents, who also didn't seem to care much about it, were all right, if you don't care, we don't care. So, and then it's if you don't go, then there's no, there's no Hanukkah or gifts or anything. I was yeah, fine. No deal.
So would you say you had the type of family where you would go see movies on Christmas? Because me personally,
absolutely. Yeah.
Being raised Catholic, the thought of doing anything from middle of the day Christmas Eve to the 26th that's not family related is what? Because I worked in a movie theater when I was in high school, as we've talked about before, and I did sometimes have to work on holidays. And of course, my parents are I can't do anything on Christmas except be with the family. But if I got to work, it's why don't you get in trouble at work? So I worked a few shifts, around the holidays.
I
couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I thought, I used to think, who the fuck's going to be, who's going to see a movie on Christmas? Oh, fucking packed.
Literally
insane.
The busiest day of the year. It's because movie theaters are one of the only things you can do on Christmas Day. It's one of the only things that's open.
But
restaurants are closed even.
I guess my assumption is that most people celebrate Christmas Eve is at night, the Christmas Eve dinner, and then Christmas Day, it's you wake up, you open presents, and then you have Christmas dinner. So then between, 11 to 5, you really have nothing to do. And usually it's get out of the house so mom can cook or whoever, you're not cooking. It's we got to do literally nothing until we get to grandma's. I just thought that was so strange. People, Yeah, you're right. It's the big, it's the biggest holiday, a movie holiday, it seems like, of the year, the biggest like box office day. And I couldn't believe, because for us it was like, actually my dad's birthday is the 23rd. So 23rd, 24th, 25th, and then like usually on the 26th too, it's like family shit nonstop.
This year will be my first real Christmas, I guess, because I'm going to Reno with Mandy's family. And I'll be involved in all their festivities. So I will report back on, I'm sure they would be appalled if I was like, yeah, I'm going to go catch a movie. I'll be back.
Yeah. just wake up on Christmas Day like, yeah, thanks for presents. So what movies do you guys want to see?
There's one of 17 to choose from. So
Real quick, hit me with any embarrassing Christmas questions you have you don't want to ask her or her family. Anything you're just wondering about, like that you don't want to seem like ill-prepared for?
Oh man, I don't know. Luckily, Mandy's handling the gifts for everyone, and just, you know, putting my name on them, or like, you know, letting me split it with her, because that was the one thing. Like, it's just like a whole new realm of potential gifts to give, and like my family doesn't really do that, so I just have nowhere to like learn that stuff.
Totally.
So I think that's it. I don't really know. Do you have any tips that I need to know?
Let me think. Depends on how Christian we talking here.
Not very. Just like usual. Just we celebrate Christmas, but that's the only time we go to church. Type.
Think there'll be any praying?
No, I don't.
Do you think I can take you to church?
No. Absolutely not. I just meant like they like not a church going household, but what celebrates Christmas. That's what I think.
Okay, let me think. So here are the basics. Santa comes down the chimney sometime while you're asleep, leaves gifts under the tree, you know, all that. Yes. Stockings, that usually has stuff in there too. They'll probably have a stocking for you with your name on it.
Wow.
Kind of be like, oh, Brett's part of the family. If there's no, because you're staying overnight at their parents' house?
Correct.
If there's no stocking specifically for you, they're sending you a message. So there you go. So look for the stocking. That's like the canary in the coal mine.
Yes.
A lot of eggnog, a lot of nog drinks.
Oh, that sounds gross. I don't know if I can handle that.
You know, just get one and kind of sip it and then put it off to the side when no one's looking.
Okay.
Christmas cookies. You're going to have a lot of cookies shaped like gingerbread men, candy canes.
Mandy is currently in the kitchen baking up a storm. Tons of cookies.
What do we talk about? What do we talk? You think gingerbread house? Is it a gingerbread house family?
I hope so. That sounds delightful. Yeah.
You've never had a gingerbread house before?
No, not personally. I grew up with a Christian neighbor who really liked our family and invited us over for Christmas stuff. So I've been around the gingerbread homes, but I've never had my own.
Okay, so something that might seem kind of weird to you, because not really celebrating Christmas and also not being Christian at all. Usually at the base of every Christmas tree is something called the nativity scene. Do you know what this is?
It's the plastic baby Jesus.
Sort of. It's like the scene where he was born. But what you technically should do is, so you have it, you have the manger, Mary and Joseph standing around, the three wise men, depending on what kit they bought, whatever. But you actually don't put the baby Jesus in the manger until the day of Christmas. So,
Where is he in the closet until then?
Yeah, you just hide him somewhere. So, I mean, they might not, but, you know, just keep an eye. If you notice that the manger is empty, that's why.
Okay. So don't be alarmed. No one stole baby Jesus.
Yeah. Yo, where's Jesus? Or who's that baby?
We actually, Mandy really, really, really wanted a Christmas tree and was kind of making peace with the fact that we couldn't because of the cats. Because the cats
Same
are
here.
A nightmare.
Same here.
But, my roommate like sent me a website that's a very nice, very fancy artificial tree called like the Balsam Hill, I think is the company.
Yeah.
And we just got it and it's really, really nice and she's very happy. And it looks really great. The cats are great. Laura sleeps under it. It's very adorable.
Aww.
It's so cute. We have so many pictures. Yeah.
Do you have ornaments?
Yes, Mandy has ornaments. This was something I'll tell you that I was shocked to learn, and I learned it last night at a Christmas party. You can't just put an ornament on a tree as is. You need ornament hooks. Did you know this?
Yeah, you got like
unbelievable.
You know, in my family, sometimes we would just use, I mean, we would have like hooks or twine or like, you know, kind of like a wire or whatever. You just kind of bend into a hook. And then sometimes we ran out, we just use paper clips.
Okay, good pro tip. Yeah, we have a 4 foot, maybe 4.5 foot tree. It looks really nice. It was pre-lit. We opted for the LED lights instead of the whatever incandescent ones because those ones can start fires, apparently, and these ones can't. And apparently this thing will last us several years. So I think it was a good purchase.
Nice. I'm going to link on that. I might want to get one myself.
I will.
You know, I was thinking, though, I might also just get, because we live like 2 blocks away from a grocery store. This is a Christmas cat talk. just real quick. I'm going to get one of the like small, like table ones, you know, maybe ones like 2 or 3 feet high. And I'm thinking maybe I'll just spray with apple cider vinegar.
Well, so exactly what we've done. We have a couple little ones too. And the cats love putting their mouths on it. But yeah, we sprayed it with, I think we did citrus spray, like some lemony spray, because cats hate that shit too.
Or maybe I'll just, I think I remember something back in the day that like you would hang fruits on Christmas trees. That was more of a Slavic or possibly German tradition of having like fruit on the trees and like the fruits like dry and give off an odor of citrus in the house, and those kind of part of the tradition. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
No, not me. Okay. Not the two. Well,
hit me up on Twitter or Instagram and let me know if I know anything, if that is true or if I just made that up. All right, enough about Christmas and the cats. Let's get into some bits and pieces. Ready?
Sure.
Wait, I should do a Christmas one. The bits and pieces, the bits and pieces, bits and pieces, and a bits and pieces.
Wow. Lovely.
Suck my dick, Bing Crosby.
I'm just going to start with some box office news because I found this surprising. Aquaman is the number one film in the world with 93.6 million despite only opening in China. Biggest opening weekend ever for Warner Brothers in China. What else do I know? Aquaman dives in, of course, use the puns, dives into 40 additional markets next weekend, including Brazil, Mexico, Russia, and the UK before it even opens here. And in just 3 days, Aquaman grossed more than the entire run of Wonder Woman in China. Isn't that insane?
I have a theory on this, but hang on, I got to Google something.
Okay. Well, this was always poised to do well other places. I don't think this will be DC's biggest film in America by any means. I think it might be one of their smallest, but I'm also prepared to be completely wrong and eat shit. Like, you know, Venom, everyone was wrong on and has almost grossed $1 billion. So why can't Aquaman? And DC, you know, has notably squandered a lot of their potential. No one liked Justice League. No one liked Batman vs. Superman. And James Wan's behind the camera for this one.
And I feel like DC went from being like, if this trend continues, DC is going to go from like a joke to like a contender. I mean, DC has been a joke for the past 4 years. Everything they put out is worse than the thing before.
Well, that's true. But even then, the movies make money. Like, they don't make as much as they should. But when you factor in all the international box office, like Suicide Squad, Batman, and Justice League are all still hits. But I mean, Aquaman was always treated as the butt of a joke. So much so that there was an entire subplot on Entourage about Vinny Chase starring in an Entourage movie directed by James Cameron. It was just like such a joke. And now here we are. And the movie looks like a joke, to be honest with you, from the trailers.
I think it looks so fucking bad.
Like, I think it looks saw the trailer, fun.
I was like, this, I mean, if you would have told me, hey, they put up a joke trailer for Aquaman and showed me that, I'd be like, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, but it's a real thing, and it's making fucking bank.
Can't believe it.
Yeah, I definitely called it bombing, but when I said that, I thought, I was speaking of domestic, so that's still there's still a chance, but...
Is it out here?
No, it comes out on Christmas, or that week.
Fascinating.
So Aquaman, now I'm trying to think of which movies are going to dominate Christmas. So we've got Aquaman, and we've got Bumblebee, which has currently 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and as everyone is saying, this is what everyone who's a Transformers fan has been wanting from the movies that it hasn't been because Michael Bay has been directing every single one.
Who directed this one?
This one is directed by Travis Knight, who I don't think he's done anything of note besides that animated movie that everyone loved, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah, I never saw that. Was that good?
It was good. And Travis Knight has my birthday, so I like the guy.
There you go.
But Bumblebee, the trailer looks really fun. It stars Hailee Steinfeld. It's got like John Cena and Justin Theroux. It looks fun. It looks like what a Saturday morning cartoon slash toy franchise should be. Because I think Spielberg produced all of them, but this is the first one that looks like they've like imbued the like Spielberg, you know, how that type of childlike storytelling for family friendly, like that, like Super 8. What am I talking about? Like Stand By Me almost type vibe or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, so here's my theory.
Yeah.
I'm under the impression that China is a communist country, correct?
Uh huh.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. So, as anyone has ever looked at the news lately, US and China are in the middle of a trade war, more like a trade cold war. And China has, for the past at least two decades, probably more like five decades, is trying to become the global powerhouse in pretty much everything. And slowly but surely, they're winning. So I think that the Chinese government is doing a countrywide initiative, either expressed or implied, to get people to see American movies. I don't think they're telling them why. I would not be surprised if the Chinese government is putting resources of their own to get Chinese people of China, to see American movies, either because this is great entertainment or blah, 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 because they want to dominate. If they dominate the box office, it's only a matter of time before Hollywood goes to China. And then
China
controls entertainment.
Well, that's exactly right. Because, I mean, how many mega blockbusters this year that were like co-financed by China? Like The Meg is a good example.
I find it suspicious that movies here were like, this is the worst piece of shit, and that does well in China. Look, China's, in some regards, especially like the major cities, are like the most advanced places in the world, arguably. The China, like, I don't believe that Chinese people don't have taste. All right. It's still a country, still people with the same access to stuff as we do. It's not like, oh, we Americans don't like Aquaman, but China, I think they're over there being like, let's fucking jack up the box office and make China number one for entertainment as well. That is my conspiracy theory, and they're winning. And I'll be honest, I don't give a shit. I work tangentially in entertainment, and if one day they're like, hey, man, you got to go to China to make videos. I'm like, fucking motherfucking see ya.
Yeah, you wouldn't
to China.
Care.
Oh, fuck, I moved to China in a second. Sometimes you hear, occasionally while doing research for work, find out about Americans who are like the biggest stars in China. Not people that we know, people who are like trying to get acting gigs in America, went to do something in China, a commercial, a game show or something, and they're like the biggest stars in the world because they're huge stars in China. But it's people you've never heard their names. When they come back to America, it's just like no one knows who the fuck they are. I like that. I hope that happens to me one day. I hope Insider gets huge in China. Insider China, send me. I'll start it. I'll be the star of all the videos. I'll be the biggest video blogging guy in China. Fine by me.
You better hope Henry Blodgett doesn't hear this, or you will end up in China.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Pay me a zillion. What's the currency over there?
Yen?
Not yet. No. Come on, currency. I'm going to look it up right now. Chinese currency.
Isn't it the yuan or the renminbi? This is an embarrassing part of the podcast. We should remove this so people
I know.
And
here it is. The renminbi. Renminbi. R-E-N-M-I-N-B-I. Hey, Chinese listeners out there, how do you pronounce that? All right.
Anyway, opening on Christmas this year. I just wanted to look and see. I want to do a little game of what's going to win the box office.
Cool. Hit me with it. The first new flash Christmas box office prediction. Now, we're going best on Christmas, correct?
This would be Christmas Day. It's okay, not. Christmas Day, I think it's like a Tuesday or a Monday. Exactly. Yeah. Tuesday. So, all right. So, wide release on Christmas Day itself. Mm-hmm. We've got Holmes and Watson with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly that I have yet to see advertising for.
No. That's going to be with the stoner college kids go see. to kill time before when they visit home. That's, I mean, I've seen a little bit of like videos that they've made more. I don't know if they're part of the movie or just like extras they did for the internet, but I'm going to be honest with you, man, it does not look good.
I saw the other one that opens that day, Vice, about Dick Cheney, directed by Adam McKay. Saw it. It sucks. It's a very poorly put together movie. Good performances. No one gives a shit about Dick Cheney. It will not do well. And then that week, so I think the Friday before Christmas, the 21st, we get Aquaman, Bumblebee, this Jennifer Lopez movie called Second Act. who directed it? Is it Zemeckis? The Welcome to Marwen movie?
What's that?
It's, look it up. It looks insane. It stars Steve Carell. No one knows what it is. That's the thing. It's like it's based on, I think, a documentary, which is based on some real life guy. Something to do with like not dolls. It's like Steve Carell, but Steve Carell as like a doll. No idea. Watch the trailer, still have no idea what it is.
Oh yes. I know.
It's based on a documentary. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, I haven't seen the documentary, but I know the story. He was what the hell happened to him? Something really terrible happens to him, and he deals with it by piecing his life together, but meticulously creating a town like with like him as a character and people knows his character, almost like trying to create like an ideal doll land version of like his life or something like that. I've seen the trailer and it looks like Oscar bait.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be very good. It looks like this year's Downsizing, which no one liked. remember that movie?
I fucking worship at the altar of Alexander Payne, but that's just a total bummer. I couldn't bring myself to watch it. It just looks so stupid.
Yeah, it's bad. And then a few days before that, on like the Wednesday, we've got Mary Poppins Returns, which I will choice to lead. But then I thought about it some more, and it's like, what kid is excited to go see Mary Poppins 2? This is more for their parents and their grandparents.
It's Mary Poppins. I mean, no one's going to be like, well, I wonder what happened. I mean, it's just another Mary Poppins movie. I would not assume that. People are like, well, you had to see the first one,
yeah,
right?
Right. And then the week before that, so still contenders for Christmas Day, but Mortal Engines, which I called, I think from the second the trailer dropped, instant bomb, going to be huge, lose so much money. It's the Peter Jackson produced movie. Look that one up, too. It looks nuts. Potential sleeper hit, The Mule. The new Clint Eastwood, that'll do good with the old people. Old folks will see that.
Let me ask you a question. I'm wondering about, so you've named two movies that I think are primed for like old middle America, Vice and this Clint Eastwood movie. But neither of these movies seem like something like fun to watch on Christmas. I feel like the audience that would do well with this is more of like you see it on a Saturday night and then you and your spouse or your kids argue about it because both these movies are this movie, I don't think anyone is going to see it because like Republicans don't want to see that. Why the movie about the guy who pretty much fucked the world up with a war he started that we can't get out of, you know, no one's going to, post 9/11, no one's going to see that on fucking Christmas.
Yeah, the movie toes the line between satire and just like biopic, and it doesn't quite work. And I don't know who it's for because like it tries to please the liberals with the satire, but it's also not biting enough. I don't know.
It's not for anyone. Yeah,
it's not for anyone.
And then I've seen trailers for this Clint Eastwood movie where what's it called? Made?
The Mule?
Run? The Mule? I mean, it looks fine, like all those other movies, but you want to see that on Christmas Day?
Well, I will tell you, I remember I worked at the movie theater when Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino opened, and it was Christmas Day, so it was like, you know, one of 15 movies opening, and then it was relegated to the smallest theater we have, which was 77 seats. And it sold out the entire fucking day. It was this whole debacle. So I think it'll be relatively big. You have to realize, you know, Clint Eastwood movies open. Yeah, they open like in like 1,000 theaters less than like a Spider-Man would. Like there's a new animated Spider-Man that everyone fucking loves coming out next week too. And I think that'll be an interesting test, because I don't, you know, it's not going to do Spider-Man numbers like this live action one would, but I think it'll do like somewhere in between a kid's movie and a superhero movie opening.
Yeah.
Maybe like 50. I'm
thinking Christmas Day, you woke up, you open the presents with the kids. They're all fucking jacked up on getting all the stuff that they wanted. They're freaking out because they got video games and toys and shit. And you kind of want to like keep the holiday cheer momentum going until Christmas dinner, where they'll probably see their grandparents and get more toys. And you got to get them all out of the house and do something. So I'm going to bet that it's going to be Transformers is going to do number one, because Aquaman. I mean, I just feel if I was a parent, when you take your kids to the movies, you're picking the one for the kids. Dad isn't being like, we're seeing what I want to see. It's not that. It's just like,
we're seeing Gran Torino.
But I'm trying to think, what would I rather want to park my kids in front of? The robot movie, the fighting robot movie, or the Aquaman movie? And to be honest, like, I was going to say that even if this Aquaman movie is any good, let's be honest, Aquaman has been the superhero punchline for like 30 years.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
We're
all used to Aquaman being stupid. So it's like, whatever.
Here's my order. I think Bumblebee, you're right, number one at the box office. Number two, I'm going to say Aquaman. Mm-hmm. Number three, I'm going to say Mary Poppins.
Okay.
Number four, I don't know. Holmes and Watson, is that going to do well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's the only comedy that's going to be out. So.
I know, but also there's no awareness of it as far as I know. Maybe it's one of those things where I'm just not watching the things where it's being advertised in front of, but I haven't seen anything.
If you were in high school or college, or I forget if you're still in your early 20s, and went back home for Christmas, or was at home for Christmas, where your buddies are still around, you still hang out with them, and your mom was just like, get the fuck out of the house, come back at 5, you know, when your aunt gets here or whatever, you get a day to kill, and your buddies are in the same position, what movie would you guys go see?
Out of all those ones?
Yeah, and keep in mind, you're probably getting high.
I mean, probably the Transformers or the Aquaman.
But you also want to be in a theater pack with fucking crazy-ass kids. Also, those movies are going to sell out. I think Holmes and Watson's going to pick up the high school to college to early 20 crowd that has nothing to do on Christmas Day.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't know how big of a market that is, but I feel like that's what I would do, because I'd be like, I don't want to see Aquaman or Bumblebee because I'm going to be fucking packed with kids. Like,
yeah, that's true. And you're also going to get on Christmas Day, you're going to get the layovers of The Grinch is still out. The animated Grinch, which, by the way, is directed by Scott Mosier of Kevin Smith fame.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Holy shit, good for him.
I know. It's a lot of Kevin Smith's boys
animated?
Are doing that. Yeah. Did you know Brian Lynch is the Minions guy now, right?
Who's Brian Lynch?
He's another one of those like Kevin Smith flunkies from back in the day who were always worked with him on his early films.
But like behind the camera, or was there?
He worked behind the camera. I think he was cameo in Mallrats or Clerks. But Brian Lynch directed Minions, which is like one of the biggest movies ever. And yeah,
that's great.
I just read that The Grinch outgrossing the Ron Howard one.
Did it outgross Zach and Mary Make a Porno?
In the first 30 minutes it was open. I'm pretty sure that happened.
That's really funny. Okay. I remember I was surprised because I was at Scott Mosier was just a guy writing on Kevin Smith's coattails. And then years ago, Mosier also produced that documentary, A Band Called Death. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did.
Holy fuck, so good. So when that came out, I'm like, all right, time to take a second look at Mosier. Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
All right, let's move on.
Enough with
the Christmas box. We've talked zero about horror movies yet. Give me something horror related.
Tony Todd reacts to the Candyman reboot news.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Here's what he said.
What'd he say? Well, in case the person coming in for the first time or just missed all of us talking about Candyman, what is going on with Candyman? Get us up to date.
Candyman is getting a, quote, spiritual sequel, otherwise known as a potential reboot. It's going to be set in the same area of Chicago that the original was, but the Cabrini Green area in Chicago is now gentrified, so the movie will take that idea on as well. It's being produced by Jordan Peele and directed by newcomer Nia DaCosta. And the question on everyone's minds right now is, will Tony Todd return to the role?
Because he played the titular Candyman, Tony Todd.
Yeah, and like that's defined his career. He's in, you know, Final Destination. He's in Hellfest for a minute. But every role of his, like the reason you know who he is because it's Candyman.
He's Candyman.
So it's kind of crazy that we don't know if he's going to be it yet. But here's what he said. I have mixed feelings because I thought they were going to make this 15 years ago. If this had been 10 years ago when I had heard the news, I would have been devastated. I would have fought for it. Now I'm in a different place.
Yeah.
I've got so many other options that even if they make it without me, which I doubt, the attention of the new movie or the attention the new movie will create will lead folks back to the original because people like to see the source material. And then he spoke a little bit about... In 2018, I think there are a few neighborhoods that could use some Candyman justice. I'm just happy that as an African-American man, that Candyman has once again been given the nod to enter people's consciousness. I hope that they don't dance around the relationship between Candyman and the love of his life, the reason for his death, and that they are actually allowed to kiss. Back then, it was rare that African-American male film stars got to kiss any of the white leading ladies they worked with. I'm
just
speaking my mind here. That's what he said. I don't know. I don't know if that's just him wanting to get down with Virginia Madsen. I don't know. It's a weird thing to say.
Would they have ever kissed in that movie? It didn't strike me as him
being in love with her, right? No, there's the very weird sexual vibe between them the whole movie. They might kiss at a... There's like a sex scene in Candyman, I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure.
When did Jungle Fever come out? When did Jungle Fever come out versus... Candyman.
I think like 4 years later. Wasn't Jungle Fever
really?
Like, well, no. Candyman was what, 90? I think Jungle Fever is 91. It's like a year later. Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, you're right, 91. I feel like in 1990 or 91, we weren't really worried about black men kissing white women. I feel like that's we'd moved past that.
Maybe not for him specifically. But basically, in that quote, he says... He said, you know, they can't imagine it bringing them back without him. Or he said, I doubt they will or whatever. So I think it's clear he's waiting for a phone call. And I love that he also was like, yeah, I don't need this. It's like, you could use it. It would probably be
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many. I mean, the guy, he's probably making bank on going to those fucking, what do you call it? Conventions, doing that. And then, you know, hey, he was in Candyman. He was a lead in Candyman and two follow-ups back when the entertainment industry still paid people. So I feel like being the star of that film and probably signing a pretty good contract to be in two more. And, you know, he was the lead in that in a hit horror movie when people were buying DVDs and VHSs and, you know, deals for them exclusively run on premium networks. So I'm not saying he's still getting checks, but I feel like if he was smart with his dough, he was. I'm pretty sure I saw him in the lobby of my building here a couple months ago. And he looked cool. He had like a fedora on, a shirt like open with a bunch of necklaces and shit. So I'm like, all right, maybe Tony Todd's doing okay.
Bunch of necklaces. All right, let's move on. So I sent you this.
Hang on. Yeah. I'm going to say Tony Todd acting-wise is where I personally would want to be if I was an actor in a sense of like, Every at least three times a year he's in a movie where the whole point of him being in the movie is to be like, hey, look, Tony Todd's here. He walks on. He has two lines. I mean, he was in the Dawn of the Dead remake, if you remember. He was the priest on the TV they're watching was all like, this is happening because you all have men-on-men relations and you don't have God. He's in the movie for 40 seconds. That's awesome. That's a great career. Hey, we make a horror movie. Tony Todd, just come and say a line, come in for a day. You know, get your couple thousand dollars. I mean, he's not going to star in Candyman. It makes no sense. Why is Candyman in his 70s or however fucking old Tony Todd is?
I don't know, man. It's possible. I just can't imagine what the movie would be like without him. It would be someone doing an impression of him, you know?
I mean, unless they go back in time and it's like, here's Candyman's dad. Did we get to the, you know, that's, it seems very, yeah, I don't know. There's no way he's going to play Candyman. I would be surprised if he's in it at all. And it's just like too fucking bad, bro.
All right. Moving on.
See what you're saying? Yeah.
Next movie. You watched the trailer. I didn't. But the James Gunn produced Brightburn trailer is out from Sony Pictures.
And this movie looks awesome.
Yeah, apparently it's going viral because everyone is like, how did they not think of this already? Like, it's basically
genius.
Superman,
genius idea for a movie.
But if evil?
Yeah, pretty much. It looks like similar to the Superman origin story, family on a farm played by, who is Pam's original boyfriend in The Office? Whatever that actor guy's name is. And
And
Elizabeth Banks. They're like, we prayed to God to have a baby. And then you see that thing land on their farm and she comes out of the rubble whole clutching a baby. And oh my God. And it's like, it's kind of this kind of not off-putting, but kind of bizarre, like montage of like the kid acting weird and having like power and like, like biting into a fork and bending it. And the parents are a little like, what's up with this kid? You know? And then they just,
what's up with this kid who crash landed in our yard?
They just hinted towards, I mean, you see him potentially flying or at least floating. He has like this red hood over his face. And the last shot is him like flying in fast to attack someone. But genius idea. Yeah. If Superman, but if the Superman origin, but if Superman was like a bad guy or a devil or a demon or whatever, you know?
Yeah. It sounds kind of like a combination of two other James Gunn things, like Slither meets Super or something.
I remember like Superman meets Chronicle, which I never saw.
Chronicle's wasn't that pretty good. Yeah.
Wasn't that the deal? Like one of the guys kind of peels off and becomes a bad guy?
Yeah. That's true.
It's directed by someone named David Yaroveski, who directed The Hive. I never saw that. Did you see The Hive?
I did not see The Hive.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. So it looks really good. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy was an entertaining movie, but like, so what? I haven't seen the second one. Is anyone listening to this thing? I don't really care for the Marvel Universe franchises at all. I like Slither James Gunn. I like Dawn of the Dead James Gunn. I like under 20 million James Gunn or whatever. Like, I just, because he's incredibly clever, he's got great ideas, he's a good filmmaker, he dials in to what the fans want pretty easily. I don't buy all this tweets pedophile bullshit. I mean, anyone with a brain in the head knows it was just a hit job,
right?
So I mean, I'm stoked to see this, and I don't know James Gunn personally, but after all the bullshit he had to endure with tweets and getting fired, I feel like James Gunn is like you know, Tina Turner post, like, I don't give a fuck kind of attitude. Like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I got the dough. If anyone in Hollywood has fuck you money, it's James Gunn after the Guardians of the Galaxy and all the other stuff he's done. So I hope to see more movies like this. I mean, this is a drop in the bucket for him. It looks relatively low budget or average budget. I think it's going to do really well on streaming. Probably do okay in the theater if people even go see movies anymore. But yeah, brilliant idea for a movie. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Moving on, what else have I got? Oh, Ben Mendelsohn, who's currently the villain in every major franchise ever. He was in, what was it, Rogue One? He was just in Robin Hood. I'm pretty sure he's in a million other things. You know who he
is.
Yeah,
my guy's working.
He will be starring in HBO's adaptation of Stephen King's The Outsider.
This has to be the quickest Stephen King book to show.
Oh, is that
right?
The new
that book
one?
Came out. Yeah, that's the one that came out in April.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is happening, and it's being directed by Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman will executive produce and direct at least the first two episodes.
Yo.
Yeah, he's directed some stuff. He did that movie Bad Words, which was okay.
Oh, did he direct that?
He may have directed some Ozark, too. I'm not sure. But in the series, a seemingly straightforward investigation into the gruesome murder of a local boy leads a seasoned cop and an unorthodox investigator to question everything they believe to be real as an insidious supernatural force edges its way into the case. I mean, the fact that it's getting like an HBO show treatment and not just some random streaming movie, I think it's indicative that it'll be like a cut above. Most.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I feel like HBO would step in if it was starting to shape up like that Castle Rock, to be like, yeah, not happening.
I can't stand Castle Rock.
What a misstep that was.
I mean, admittedly didn't finish it, but I don't want
well,
to.
How much do you have to watch? How much are you supposed to watch of a show for opinion on? I mean, Mr. Mercedes was a clunker.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, save for the first scene of the first episode, it was like, who gives a shit? What other King shows are there? Are there any going on right now that we know of?
Not that I can think of. No, I mean,
okay.
Yeah, there used to be what was everything I can think of is like a made for TV event, like Rose Red or whatever, Red Rose.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, obviously we had 11/22/63. Was that what it was?
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, reflecting back on it, because it was like I think an 8-episode or 10-episode, however long it was. To be honest, could have been like a 3-hour movie. No one would go see a 3-hour movie, obviously. But yeah.
Under the Dome is a big one. I didn't watch that.
Oh yeah, no, that got canceled. I couldn't get into that. Did you ever know how it ended? I had to look on Wikipedia because the book is insanely long. I think it's his longest book. And then watching the show, I was just like, I mean, are we ever going to find out what it was? So I just went on the Wikipedia and read the ending or the idea of the dome when it's revealed. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. So I feel like if I committed to that show and on season 5 at the end, they were like, and here's what the dome's all about. I'd be like, fuck you. I want my money back. Even though I gave them the money. It's so stupid.
Tell me, do you remember it?
Yeah. It was kind of like they explained it like how aliens from obviously another planet, like more intellectual, bigger beings, entrapped humans in there the same way like you or I would have an ant farm. And it was like these alien kids just like trapping people in there to see what would happen because us to them are like ants to us. Does that make sense?
Oh, fuck you.
And then, but at some point they figure out what's going on or they're able to talk to them. I don't know if they get like released or whatever. They were called, he called them in the book Leatherheads because they had like weird heads or whatever. And that was pretty much the premise of it. You get hints of it because there's also in the dome, they find a smaller dome with monarch butterflies in it. And I guess that was meant to be like a clue of what exactly was happening, you know, like the fact that these bigger beings were entrapping us the way that we entrap insects. So fucking stupid.
Dumb. Moving on.
Can you imagine if you like why you put like Game of Thrones level attention to that and that's how it ended? Imagine the ending of Game of Thrones was just like it zooms out and is like, what was that saying elsewhere where the whole thing was in the mind of an autistic kid or something like that? Wasn't that that? That's true. That's how they, I think. Like you just be like, wait, what? It just the last episode of Game of Thrones is young. What's his name? George R.R. Martin just like drawing pictures and his mom's being like, oh, that's just Georgie drawing his dragons.
George, get down for dinner. Yeah.
Yes, mom. What are we doing today? I was just drawing my new show, Game of Thrones. I'm gonna make it a show someday. Oh, Georgie. O.R.R.
Credits.
Yeah. Please do that. Oh, HBO, please do that.
What else do I have?
Yeah, why don't we talk about that?
I don't know if I mentioned this last week. It's just a quick note. Guillermo del Toro has confirmed that he is indeed producing an American remake of Terrified, that movie that we really liked from Shudder recently.
Yeah, it's actually really good.
Yeah, so that's already being remade.
Not to be confused with Terrifier.
Which I'm going to watch because I hear it's great.
It's fucking insane.
Yes, I'll watch that too. This is great. So Netflix just won the rights to this. I think it was a New York Magazine article. Yeah, it was from The Cut. New York Magazine's The Cut. It was an article called, I think it was called The Watcher or something.
Okay.
Exactly. So I don't know if you remember last year, I detailed one of these like magazine articles that became a movie. It was about the worst roommate ever. Like the guy who just basically would like strong arm his way into like an apartment and then refuse to leave. And he had like all these he just knew the law well enough where he like would screw people out of their own apartments. It was like this horrible horror story. So there's another story in that same vein in New York Mag. And when I read it, I knew it was instantly going to get film treatment. And of course, after a ferocious bidding war between 6 studios, Netflix won the rights to The Watcher, I think for $1 million at least. It's going to be directed
by, I don't think I've ever heard about it,
Henry Jost and Ariel Schulman, the guys behind the Catfish movie, who went on to direct like Paranormal Activity 3 and some other stuff. One of the iTonya producers is producing it. Netflix will pay 7 figures for the a rights package that includes an article published on The Cut and the rights of the beleaguered homeowners who've lived this nightmare for 4 years. So let me give you like, I'll give you the shortest description I can of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is the article begins in June 2014 when Derek and Maria were preparing to move with their three children into the dream house they bought for $1.3 million in Westfield. Derek mm-hmm. found a peculiar welcome letter in the mailbox addressed to the new occupant. The anonymous mm-hmm. writer detailed his long history with the house and divulged details about the family that were more than disturbing as the letter went on. How did you end here? The writer asked. Did 657 Boulevard call to you with its force within? The letter went on. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of this house? Do you know what lies within the walls? Why are you here? I will find out. You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think that there are three that I have counted, the anonymous correspondent wrote before asking if there were more on the way. Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me. So the new homeowners sought out the police, and several letters, several other letters arrived. The mm-hmm. letter writer used the word blood often, and the sellers acknowledged they too received a letter recently that they tossed away. Soon, they and neighbors on the block were eyed as potential suspects, and the dream became a nightmare. The couple tried in vain to discover the letter writer. They eyed their neighbors warily. They never moved their children into the house. They tried to sell, even tried to raise the property, but the letter writer, and they tried to raise the property and build two new houses that would have allowed them to recoup. The property was a few feet short of zoning requirements, and the town, fueled by anger of neighbors, wouldn't grant the permission. So they have mostly rented the house while trying to stay afloat. That's like the long and short of a very long read, amazingly creepy article. That's the gist of it. So they're going to turn that into a horror movie, which will be very easy to do. It just sounds fucked up.
Yeah,
it
sounds
interesting.
It's
like a real thing that happened. Just someone stalking a house. So simple, but so scary. So that's going to happen on Netflix. That's exciting. What else?
Yeah, cool.
Oh, so I talked about the Lars von Trier house that Jack built, cut that there was problems with the MPAA. As a result of them screening the unrated cut before the R-rated release, they're releasing the R-rated cut as planned next week. That's what we'll talk about next week. It goes on VOD, so you can definitely watch it.
I don't want to.
We gotta. It's gonna. People say it's really. People say it's a dark comedy. So I'm interested to see what it is. But the theatrical version opens Friday. And then now the director's cut isn't allowed to come out for 6 months. But the director's cut is only 4 minutes different. This isn't one of those cases where it's like an entirely different movie, which has been the case for him before. It's just like a regular classic, like when the DVD says unrated so they can put more tits and blood in it. I think it's one of those. I don't think it really is that meaningful. I think it was more of a marketing ploy. A marketing ploy that really blew up because now they have to like deal with the MPAA. But
I guess. I mean, six months really that big of a deal?
No. I don't think anyone cares. Like, I'll see the theatrical version and be fine with it. I don't think I'm going to be pissed. I'm not watching, you know, the full vision. I'm sure I just cut some gore. I'll see it one day. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Fine.
What else have I got? I'm trying to move through. Just some movie announcements. Ryan Reynolds is moving into producing territory and has teamed with the IT producers, Vertigo Entertainment, to make something called The Patient Who Nearly Drove Me Out of Medicine. And it's written by someone named Jasper DeWitt, who wrote the novella originally published on Reddit.
And what's it called again?
The Patient Who Nearly Drove Me Out of Medicine. And it's a supernatural horror film about an idealistic young doctor who tries to solve a mystery and heal its most difficult patient. That's all I know.
Okay.
What else do we have?
It's interesting that a lot of like things that start as short stories on the internet are like being optioned, or like articles are being optioned for movies.
I mean, when I was an intern at Lionsgate, we would literally have to pick, I think, one or two articles a week that we just had read that we thought would be good fodder. So like, yeah, they're definitely always looking for like the next big thing. Yeah.
Cool.
A24 is snatched up the American rights to some movie called The Hole in the Ground, which is heading to Sundance next year. And it's bought, it was bought, I guess they're sharing the rights between A24 will take the film to theaters, while DirecTV will offer a limited pay-per-view window before release. The Hole in the Ground stars Irish actress, whoever her name, as Sarah, a mother who moves with her young son to a country home on the edge of a forest, which happens to hide an enormous sinkhole. Her boy vanishes and soon reappears unharmed, though his behavior grows increasingly disturbing, leaving his mother to fear the worst, that the boy in her home isn't her son at all. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably like every like kid got molested story.
Jesus.
Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And goes to camp, comes back weird. What happened? Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing. Everything's fine.
Yeah, now I'm suddenly into like drugs.
Netflix acquired rights to a Hong Kong set horror comedy series called Demon's Path. The series follows a forensic pathologist who has the ability to see the last 10 seconds of life of dead people. Working together with a friendly exorcist and a policeman, they solve homicide cases, but as their investigations proceed, they become the target of a murderer. It sounds like a fun premise.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
I'll see what the reviews are like, but that comes out December 22nd.
All right.
And then I've got a couple, or just one more, a couple, two more.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Johannes Roberts, the guy who directed the really good shark movie, 47 Meters Down.
Yeah, it's a good one. Good until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's good. And then he also did The Strangers 2 from this year, Strangers Pray at Night, which was okay. He is directing the reboot that I just found out's happening of Resident Evil. And screenwriter Greg Russo says the screenplay is bringing it back to the horror roots. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of the franchise, so to work on that was a lot of fun. For me, it was a clear cut that I wanted to go back and make it scary again, like a horror film, in terms of the classic James Wan style. So that was the pitch, going back and looking what made the game scary. So he said Resident Evil 7 was a bit of a touchstone for the draft, which is the most recent game that I actually played on PlayStation 4, and it's awesome. And that was my problem with the Resident Evil movies. They chose to go like the action, gun-toting female hero route instead of like, holy shit, these games are horrifying route. So if they are going to redo it as horror, I'm all for it.
Me too.
Yeah, I hope it's good. All right, and the last bit before we transition to what we watched, it's the next announcement of the next Hulu Blumhouse Into the Dark. It's called New Year, New You, and it'll be directed by Sophia Tikal, who did Always Shine, which we love. And the plot of this movie, the plot centers on a group of old high school friends who reunite in a house for New Year's Eve, where they're forced to confront traumas from their past. It's an 85-minute movie. They've all been under 90, which I enjoy, but when I was reading about this, it became clear that like how quickly they're churning these out. Sophia Tikal said they quickly reached out to her, like, you know, after that whole Jason Blum said a bunch of shit about women and how they don't direct stuff. Like, they pretty hastily reached out to her and they shot it in like 2 weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me pull up that article.
I feel like this was already in the works before that happened. I feel like because that whole thing came out while he was doing press for Halloween, which came out in mid-October.
Right.
And so I'm pretty sure they said this movie was made in – it's been shot. They're already done with that.
Here's what she said. She said she was approached by Blumhouse in the early summer with a script by Adam Gaines that she revised, and they shot the project in 15 days between July and August. Yeah. That's when a concise shooting schedule, even on micro budgets. It was a really, really fast process. I had a great crew around me. Even though it was chaotic, we didn't feel like we lost anything. Mm-hmm. This was my first time working as a director for hire. Yeah, I guess it was before the hubbub.
Was that possibly the one when, because famously from that article,
he was like, I don't remember the name. Yeah,
he's like, what's the name of what's her face we just work with? Is this the titular what's her face?
It could be. Whatever. I guess it could be. Yeah.
No, we work with plenty of women. What's her face?
Yeah, incredible. But so Sophia Tichall's, Always Shine is great. We loved it. And
one of our favorites from 2016?
I think so. Maybe 15. Yeah.
Great movie.
But yeah, really liked it. And we'll talk about the other Into the Dark shortly. But before that, let's do a little three, two, one.
What did you watch? Hey, if any of the listeners want to get us a Christmas gift and want to do a what did you watch theme song, a produced one, we'll play it. We'll play it on the show. I'm asking for gifts. How petty is that?
I love it. It's fun.
All right.
Did you watch anything?
Yeah, I watched a bunch of stuff. What did I watch? Pull my list here. So we're going to be doing the Into the Dark and the Devil
May the Devil Take You. Yes.
Oh, sorry. I bailed on Dead Wax. We talked about it last week. It started off okay, but I got to the middle of it and it just fucking came to a screeching halt as far as entertaining me. So I bailed on it. Sorry. And the fact that like every episode's like 10 minutes tells you that's probably not that good. If even at 10 minutes a pop, it's still super boring.
I need to watch that. I still haven't. I know you said I shouldn't, but I'm going to try to.
I don't know. Shouldn't. Maybe you'll like a little bit more than I, but I just found myself being like, what the fuck is going on in this thing? You turned me on to a movie that's a Shudder exclusive called You Might Be the Killer.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm sure it sucks.
Yeah, it was not very good. The premise is a guy is at what seems to be a camp, and he's the lead counselor, and there's other counselors there. I think it's the kids showing up there, and he calls his friend who works at like a video toy nerd shop and is like, oh shit, everyone's dead except me and a few others. There's a killer here, et cetera, et cetera. And she kind of talks him through like what's going on, what did you see, what's happening. And very early in there, we reveal that he actually might be the killer and doesn't realize it. And throughout the movie, he's trying to figure out if he's a killer, if he's not, how he could not know if he's a killer or not, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not very good. Now, normally I would just be like, fuck it, don't watch it. But I feel like there's something you and I need to talk about that everyone who listens to the pod needs to hear, is we need to have a conversation once and for all about the really sad, if not alarming, state of comedy horror movies or horror comedy.
I can't stand. There's like a certain breed of them that I can't stand. And it looks like this was one of them.
Yeah, they've all become the same. And what the horror comedy they've all become is this incredibly self-aware horror comedy movie where the movie becomes about horror movies. Because sure enough, he realizes that if he's the killer, he's on the phone with his nerdy friend who works at the video store, and she knows all about horror movies. And she's like, oh, well, you know, there's the final girl and it has to be a virgin. And is there anyone there who seems like blah, 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 blah. And after a while, you're just like, the whole thing becomes like understanding the arc of horror movies so he can see who's going to potentially kill him if he's the killer. And it's just done in flashbacks, and every kill is kind of like funny, sort of. And it has like the uses elements from 80s horror movies, 80s slasher movies. All the movies are like that. Like, we had this problem with Slice, had this problem with a lot of the stuff that ends up on Shudder, where the filmmaker knows everything, doesn't even know everything, knows like the basics of 80s horror and just uses those references as a wink to the audience, almost to be like, hey, you guys like this stuff. I'm going to pretend like I like it too as the filmmaker, so you'll watch it. And it's just nonstop referencing horror movies or horror tropes or the horror arc of how a killer or how a slasher movie works. And they're just so unfunny and lame, and everyone's a smartass. And it's kind of like they're openly pointing out like, oh, that's the jock guy and that's the slutty girl and he's the nerd who knows everything and that's the virgin or and, you know, like the slasher, blah, 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 blah. We got to destroy the mask or whatever in order to like send it back to hell and fucking whatever. And it's becoming like the laziest of horror movies. You know what I mean? I feel like back in like the late 90s and early 2000s, every horror movie or suspense movie was like sort of like a split personality or unreliable narrator, you know, because Fight Club got really popular. And like there's just so many movies you're being like, you were the killer the whole time. I'm stalking myself. I never had a kid that's lost or whatever, some bullshit like that. And this has become that new thing where just these movies, it's like – it's just a bunch of movies. It's just a movie after movie about kids who know a lot about horror movies, realizing that they're in a horror movie scenario and talking about horror movies to figure out how they're going to get out of it alive. I hate it so much. It has to stop.
Yeah.
It's so
annoying. That reminds me of a handful of movies from like recently that I didn't like. I hated Tragedy Girls. I hated Final Girls.
Yep.
I hated, there has to be more, but there's ones I like notably. Like The Tucker and Dale's versus Evils.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. With Tucker and Dale, it's funny. It's a horror movie. And, of course, people will point to either Shaun of the Dead or Cabin in the Woods. Those three movies, though, they're, like, great movies. And I would argue that Tucker and Dale, what's funny about that movie is that it plays like a normal horror movie, but seeing it from them their perspective, it's just one long comedic misunderstanding.
Right.
But in no... call at any point people being like, this is like in a horror movie and here's what we got to do. They're acting how people do in horror movies, but at no point were they talking about horror movies, were they? I only saw it once.
I don't think so. No, I remember the victims being like comically stupid, like
yeah. But that was kind of turning it on ear to be like, look at these idiots like splitting up and running headfirst in the danger, and they pretty much they're the reason for their own deaths. That's what made it so funny. But at no point was it like, oh, like, I mean, we know a lot about horror movies, and we as the audience, another reason why the movie's so good is like they don't spoon feed you that. You as an audience or a viewer are like, oh, right, this is like a horror movie that's actually a comedic misunderstanding. And Shaun of the Dead, I don't recall them mentioning talking about horror. It's kind of the same thing where it's like we took a normal type of horror movie, and in Shaun of the Dead, it's funny because they're self-absorbed people. The zombie apocalypse happens and they're still self-absorbed people. And that's funny.
Right. Yeah. It's different than like, you know, McGee's The Babysitter.
Yes. It's another
insufferable.
One.
Insufferable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was one that I think we both gave a pass because it was like fun enough and Christmas themed. Better Watch Out.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That was fine.
That was fine. That's different. I guess it's more of these meta, like Final Girls and this one that you watched.
And here's why. I know it's because these movies, okay, they're not funny, obviously, and I feel that whatever the premise of the horror movie is, so I'm gonna dissect this movie that none of you have seen and I was just not seeing. So the gist of the movie is this guy is the camp leader and the camp counselors that go to this camp, I'm assuming a little bit before the kids arrive, to get everything set up. He tells this story about this mask that's in the woods, and if you put it on, you become a killer and kill everybody, just like this happened at that same camp, blah, blah, blah. Surprise, he finds the mask, and now he puts it on accidentally, kills a bunch of people, somehow takes it off, and this is why he doesn't know he's the killer. But you kind of find this out because he's on the phone with his friend the fucking entire movie as he's running around the woods and trying to figure out what's going on. My point is this. First of all, at the core of this movie and all these other comedy horror movies is a pretty lame horror movie. I feel like what happens is when the filmmakers and people start working on these movies, they have not even a script or an idea, and they realize that if they just make it a meta horror movie, then make it a horror movie about this horror movie, then they can sidestep the fact that they just can't write a movie, you know? So then now, it's not a bad idea for a horror movie, but on what actually happens, that is that very movie, the mask where the guy puts it on, he kills people and doesn't remember. There's so little of that, and there's just really not a lot of story to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so then, I don't hate that part of the premise.
But assuming that these people are not very good at writing or making horror movies. It just added on this layer, almost like a safety to be like, well, how about instead of working this one story we have, we make it a movie that's kind of like a comedy commenting on horror movies. And that to me is just like most of these movies are just like the ultimate cop out, because now you no longer have an actual scary movie. You have a majority of people talking about what happens in scary movies to stop this guy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And all these bad horror comedy movies are doing exactly that. They're taking a mediocre premise that could be, any premise can be great, I feel. Instead of like digging deep and writing a good script, they just abandoned that to make it a movie about the movie that they never made, if that makes sense, you know, or like didn't have the guts to make. So what you have is a bunch of people talking about horror movies while this kind of like thing is happening in the background that we check in every once in a while. It's very frustrating. What I was also going to say is like, so, hey, it's hard to write a movie. I'm not acting like just do it. I mean, writing is very difficult, but I feel that what people are doing now is they're taking half of a premise and then being like, well, I'll just make it a very self-aware comedy. But guess what? You're also not funny. So now you have someone who can't write a horror movie trying to make a funny movie. It's two things you're not good at. Comedy is actually way harder than making horror, I feel. You produce comedy. You know comedians. You know how hard it is.
Yes.
I did comedy. I do comedy and still have done it for several years. It's incredibly difficult. It's like the hardest thing to do. So it's like two things they can't do. They can't make a horror movie and they're not funny. And what you have is a lot of like, let's talk about Jason Voorhees for like 20 minutes and what happened. Oh, wait, which Friday the 13th movie was that? No, oh yeah, the first one. No, his mom killed the one in the first one. God, it's so tedious. Because also this person who made it doesn't know anything about horror movies. They don't. It's not someone who has like a deep understanding of it. I mean, they talk about Friday the 13th and maybe another one. It's not like
just the mainstream.
Yeah, they don't have a deep
surface.
They feel like it's. I don't know. They feel like they're not that big of horror fans. They're just like have the gist of it. I don't know. It's just so bad. It's so frustrating. Need a call to an end to these self-aware horror comedies. They're not any good.
I'm fully over it.
I can't do it anymore. I just cannot. I had high hopes. I usually have higher hopes, and this one I'm like, oh, this will be fun, but it's not. It sucks. Please, no more.
All right,
that's my soapbox.
Did you watch anything else?
The two main events.
Okay, let me do mine real quick.
Go ahead.
So I did see something for the podcast in theaters this week. I saw Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. Musical, right?
Yes. It was described to me as a zombie Christmas musical, and that's exactly what it is. You know what I will say about it? It is fun. It is harmless. It's amusing. Horror fans will like it. I just think, you know, I sat there, I watched all 90 minutes with a smile on my face. I had a lot of fun. But I'd say about like the hour mark is when I was like, all right, I get it. Let's wrap it up. But it's not ever bad. It just kind of loses steam. Yeah, this movie owes so much to Shaun of the Dead. It's essentially the same movie, but with music in it. It's just like, you know, people walking around, zombies are happening, and they're kind of like the opening song. It's actually great. It's like her singing with headphones in while, you know, the zombies just started taking over, and like in the background and like literally like feet away from her is all this horrible destruction happening. So like it's a fun, you know, riff on these type of movies. It's just like nothing revolutionary or groundbreaking. And I can't like say, wow, that was incredible. But I very much enjoyed watching it. It's a very fun. If a zombie Christmas musical sounds like something you would like, this movie's not gonna not work for you. It gets the job done. And the kills, surprisingly, it's R-rated. So the kills are surprisingly good. And the music isn't half bad. If you like musicals, there are a couple like, you know, songs that'll be stuck in your head after. I'm glad I saw it. I'd recommend it. I just don't think it's, you know, it's not my favorite movie of the year or anything, but it was good. And then I did see a movie that I would call one of my favorites of the year. Came out this weekend. It stars, it stars Natalie Portman, but I will, spoiler alert, she doesn't really show up until halfway through the movie. But it's called Vox Lux. And I would say it's kind of the anti A Star Is Born. Like, A Star Is Born is like a mainstream crowd pleaser about a pop star's rise and fall, I guess. And this one is using that same story of a pop star's rise and potential fall to like say something about American culture. It's very, very polarizing. It's like you're either going to think it's the best movie of the year or the absolute worst. There's no in between whatsoever. I don't want to spoil it at all because I knew nothing about it going in. And the opening scene just thrust you in to this unapologetic, like, millennial, like, Keon and I were talking about it, and he said it reminded him of, like, a 21st century Boogie Nights, which I think is a very flattering comparison. I think it's I think it's a good comparison. It's just like that's what the movie's ambitions are. It's like this trying to comment on an entire era via this, like, you know, a specific story. And I think the movie pulls it off. I think it's fantastic. I just think it's very like I wouldn't tell my parents to see it. I would tell you to see it. I wouldn't tell fans of the podcast necessarily to see it. It's not really horror, but it's one of the best movies, definitely one of the best American movies of the year. Natalie Portman is fantastic in it, but it's basically it's her character the whole time. It's just played by like a younger version in the first half. But it's just like it's about how the, you know, pop music's relation to the zeitgeist and tragedy and like the social consciousness. It's just it's all over the place. And the beauty of the movie is that from scene to scene, I had absolutely zero fucking idea where it was going or what where it would end. And I was just like totally along for the ride and thought it was just like so enthralling and engaging. And just, I loved it. I really think you should see it in theaters if you can this week.
Definitely. Yeah. Like I'll try and check it out.
Yeah. You and Mo, I think, would both have strong opinions on it, whether you liked it or you didn't. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and what else did I watch? Those two. All right, yeah, that's enough. We can get to the main event.
Which one you want to do first?
Let's do Pooka first.
Let's do it.
All right, so Pooka, directed by Nacho Vigalondo, and I believe written by the same guy who wrote the last one, Flesh and Blood, which was, you know, terrible. Gerald Olson. He's written. No, wait. I guess he didn't write that. Pardon me. It's written. He hasn't written anything really besides this Into the Dark. But Pooka is the first one of these Into the Dark movies that I think kind of works. It's
agreed.
It's good ish. It's not great. It's like it's a little better than okay.
If this was like a not Tales from the Crypt, but kind of like a Twilight Zone Outer Limits, I'm drawing a blank. If this was like an anthology show where each episode was an hour, I think this one would have been more impactful or interesting. I'll say this one's closer to a Black Mirror episode than it is like a horror movie. I felt
also what I will say about it is it's the only one I felt that actually was in the spirit of the holiday or the month that it was supposed to be celebrating. Like, this is like the Christmas one, and I think this one is more a Christmas movie than Flesh and Blood was a Thanksgiving movie. And The Body was a Halloween movie. You know,
and this one kind of takes place in and around Christmas. And
it does.
Christmas is part
and
of
then,
it.
Like, once you realize it takes it until maybe the third act to reveal its hand. But once it does, I'm not going to spoil it. Once it reveals like what it's doing, you're like, oh, I get it. It's this classic Christmas story. It's basically, I guess it's not really spoiling anything. This movie can be viewed as a very weird horror adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
Well, did you get that vibe by the end? Like once it started looping back and like showing him watching himself,
which one's Christmas Carol? Is that the one with
the one where like the ghosts of Christmas past and like they're showing him like his life before there's like he's watching his life unfold before his eyes and then he learns
Scrooge,
to be a better guy. Scrooge.
Yeah, a little bit like that. I wouldn't say it's straightforward as a comparison of that, but it has vibes of that. Keep in mind, everyone, it's a horror movie, so it's not.
How would you describe this movie? What is it about?
A down and out actor goes to an audition and lands the role of playing the life-size version of a toy, a new toy coming out called Pooka with an exclamation point. It's a furry little costume, big head, giant eyes. It's the toy of the season. And he went from being, you know, barely able to pay his bills, out of work actor, to now getting paid pretty well to play this character. And he has the suit and he's doing all these appearances, including like in-store stuff. And everybody loves Pooka. Therefore, when he wears the outfit, everybody loves him. But like also like it starts playing like tricks on his mind. Like he's having like these like vivid nightmares of like murder or a giant Pooka like beating the shit out of like a wall or someone. And he's kind of like, as the movie goes on, he's having a harder time just deciphering like what's real and what isn't.
Right. And the movie also posits like this Jekyll and Hyde style thing where it's like Pooka can be nice or Pooka can be naughty and you can't control it. Pooka controls it.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And he's he meets a girl as a kid and he kind of wants to be more in their lives, but the Pooka thing is like really, it's like fucking with him and he's having a hard time like keeping everything separate. But he also like is into it. Like he loves, he just is drawn to the costume or playing the character. And even when things kind of start to cool off, that's when things kind of start to get a little crazy for him. So yeah, it has this comment on fame and, you know, playing a character versus what you are like in real life and, you know, how that can potentially affect your family and the people around you and what happens when everyone loves you to turns that everyone hates you. And he kind of unravels in that way. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. How long was it? I think it was like an hour and a half.
It's like
85. Right?
Yeah. It's the first Into the Dark movie that's fucking watchable. The other two were very bad.
This one feels like, if you like Black Mirror, you'll probably enjoy this one.
Yeah. And I want to talk, this is spoiler territory, so stop listening if you're going to watch it. But the ending of this movie is why I say it's A Christmas Carol, is because once it shows its hand, you kind of have to play the movie backwards because you realize that, oh, the whole Pooka thing is totally made up in his head. You realize that the person you were watching scenes before be a dick to that girl and her son.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that, oh, he was doing that before, and now we're seeing the cause of like what caused this whole thing. And it turns out he was in a car accident with his wife and son, killing them
after a
huge fight. His wife and son died, and this whole movie we just watched was a kind of funny that we mentioned it after making fun of this trope, but it was kind of all in his head, and it was like his conscience letting him, or playing through a scenario that would allow him to grieve properly and like justify.
Yeah.
So like once the movie's over, you realize it's no classic Nacho Vigalondo shit, just like a twist ending that kind of changes everything that came before it. I definitely liked it more knowing that, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Once it reveals his hand, it was definitely one of those like, oh, okay, kind of moments. Because there's definitely some parts in the movie where like he leans really heavily on the, you see something crazy happen, and then it turns out it probably didn't happen. You know, people getting hurt, people getting potentially killed, and then later it's like, oh, there's that person. Like, and it's just played like what's in his head and what's reality. But as you learn, it's kind of like almost like a fever dream.
Right. It's kind of clever because you do realize at the end that Pookas are a real thing and like they are just this toy craze. But his like delusion made up all the like the evilness of it. It's just like, his kid was holding a Pooka when he died. So the last thing he thought of or whatever, you know, it's just like one of those endings where like you realize Ghost Stories, the movie, had an ending like this too, where you realize everything that came before it was just like some version of this guy's head. Like he brought in Pooka because his son was holding one and then he made up his whole backstory.
But also we see that he was not getting along with his wife at all and they were fighting and he was clearly like a dick.
He was cheating, and, apparently.
He's just been a huge asshole, but he's really nice to his kid. And you could tell his kid was like, didn't like him or scared of him because he just sees his dad screaming at his mom and breaking shit or whatever. But he clearly loves his old Pooka doll. So to kind of back end this, like, he's Pooka because in the leading up to it, in his dream, he's like just met his wife and kid, you know, like they're just a woman with a child and they're kind of not sure about him because, you know, hey, you know, like I got a kid. Pooka connections to get the kid a doll and shows up at his birthday party dressed as Pooka, but then some other kid like kind of picks on him at the party, so it's implied that he beats the shit out of the kid in the Pooka costume or whatever. Like, but clearly like his son doesn't have much relationship with him but has a good relationship with Pooka, so he's kind of like, if I'm Pooka, my kid will like me more, sort of thing, like trying to get close to his kid via this doll.
So the movie's a little more ambitious than the other two. Right. I don't know if it quite sticks a landing or pulls it all off.
Correct. But, I think it's like a C plus B minus. Like it's fine when it kind of came, when it kind of was presented on what it was at the ending, not so much a twist ending, but like as it kind of sticks the landing, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, fine.
Yeah. That's how I felt. But I think we both agree that Netflix's May the Devil Take You is pretty fucking great.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Like, so in those Into the Dark series are getting progressively better, but that's not saying that much.
Yeah, by next Christmas, that might be good.
Yeah, it's true. It might be like worth like telling people about. Yeah. But fucking Indonesia, man. I don't know what the fuck they're doing over there, but this movie fucking rules.
It's
by
like, the way, it's the literal translation. Yeah, go ahead.
According to Wikipedia, the movie, the translation is Before the Devil Picks Up, but I'm sure that's just lost in translation. Yeah, but anyway.
This movie to me played like an Indonesian riff on a Sam Raimi movie, particularly Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, it feels like a mix of Drag Me to Hell and Evil Dead. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very simple premise. It opens with a man participating in like some sort of ceremony with like a woman and like sacrificing something, and basically you come to realize he's making a literal deal with the devil
to be like rich and famous and successful.
And then it cuts to opening credits, and yet you see like through newspaper headlines this man's a meteoric rise very quickly, like becomes rich and famous, and then you start seeing through
give
the
me
same
that irony, baby. Give me that irony.
Yeah, through those headlines, you also find out that like he had a wife and she died, and I think another wife,
and some of his died. Fortune is crumbling, and
his fortune's crumbling.
He's a controversial character, so it leads us into him on his deathbed, and we're at the hospital. We meet his kids, and surprise, surprise, his family fucking hates him. Or there's a complicated relationship there where he has kids from one mom or one wife and then adopted or born from his second wife.
Right.
They do not get along. They don't know really what to say. It's focused on his first daughter, the only one he had from the first wife.
Right.
I'm assuming probably the daughter that he had before he made the deal with the devil. And so he passes away. And then they realize that among the many things he has is a house out kind of in the middle of nowhere where they've all convened for various reasons. And the decision is, are we going to sell this house? What are we going to do with it? It's like dilapidated. It's kind of like ignored. It's almost like once he got his money, he just fucking took off on the house, and maybe people have been there, but it's kind of dumpy and trashed, and they're all there. By the way, you learn very quickly, that's also the house where he made the deal with the devil.
Right.
And shit gets fucking crazy.
Yeah, Evil
Dead.
Yeah, once the horror stuff kicks in, it's just, I wouldn't say it's like scary. Like I was never like, holy fuck, I'm like mortified, intense. I have to hide. It's just intense and very, I'd say creepy atmosphere mixed with just like mind-bogglingly crazy imagery. Just like a demon ripping a person's face off.
To reveal that she's in, oh, it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many scenes of gore, and like just the creepy woman herself almost looks like, you know, someone that would like Samara from The Ring or something, but much scarier. And like the way it like moves is scary. Yeah. Yeah.
What I love about this movie is it plays on a horror trope that I don't think we've seen a lot. This kind of the idea of like the sins of the father. So this movie starts off, you see a guy, he's begging and doing this ritual to be like, I want to be rich and famous or whatever, however he words it. And you see through the credits, it technically happens. But then also, you know, irony that, you know, he is a cold businessman with.
Well, yeah, it became clear that, I mean, it was clear from the deal right away. She said, you know, your wish has been granted, but we're going to call on you soon. And you're going to have to pay for it. Yeah.
You would think he would have to pay for it. Like, it wouldn't be much of a movie if it came back for him. But I'm sure he's paid for it through the agony of, you know, being a rich, cold businessman with a wife who dies and kids who hate him.
Yeah, and the wife, it's very clear, dies in the same circumstances as everyone else from this demon lady killing her. Yeah.
But now what's interesting is, like, the demon's not going after his kids long after they're gone. They even realize it. And I love this idea of a movie where, like, he fucked up, and it's not really his sin to bear, or it kind of was, but it's just moved on to the kids, and now they are, like, fighting for survival over something they didn't do. And love that kind of, like, kind of cautionary tale of, like, when you fuck up, I mean, forget about, you know, asking the devil or demons for favors, but if you fuck up, it's like, it's not just you, it's your family. And, like, you watch, like, this, like, horror version of that, of, like, you know, this stuff is generational. It's not just, like, you know, if you are a bad person, your kids and your children's children will suffer just as much, if not more.
Which is a lesson I also learned from Hereditary, which is funny because I also compared the other Indonesian horror movie to Hereditary.
Which one?
Satan's Slaves.
Yeah. Did you watch that? Yes. I did. The one with the bell, right?
Yeah. And I think this was way better than that. Would you agree? Yeah.
I would, yes.
I think Satan's Slaves just, like, ran out of steam. This movie, I mean, the whole, it's like almost 2 hours, and it's just, like, relentlessly crazy, like, the whole time.
Yeah.
And, like, once the sister, Lola, or whatever her name is, starts, like, becoming, I don't even know if she was possessed, but she just, like, decided to become a concubine for the devil or whatever, and just starts, like, doing his bidding and, like, killing the other chick. It doesn't let up on, like, any of its really fucked up themes. Like, it's just like, oh, this person might kill her family. Oh, no, there she goes, killing her family. Like, yeah, it just does it.
And it's a really clever way of, like, I never really watched the movie Succession. I don't know. Or that show, Succession, on HBO. Great. Yeah. Is it? I mean, I should pick up. We watched a few episodes. It didn't grab me. But that kind of has how that's kind of, like, horrible, incredibly successful, rich, yet awful human being businessman has kids, and, like, the kids are various degrees of like, you have one that wants to be a little more good, and then one who's just on board to be as much of a douchebag, and one who kind of, like, this, what you said there, I thought was so interesting about the one daughter that, whether she gives into it or is taken over, it's like,
I think it was purposefully unclear. Maybe I missed it.
Sometimes, sometimes these types of people have kids that turn out to be very liberal and kind of like, I hate you and success, dad. You know, I'm out of here forever, whatever. I'm going to become an artist and move to Philadelphia. And they also have another kid who's like, my dad is the greatest. So when I grow up, I want to be like him or whatever. So, like, you have the kid who, like, is on board with it, and then the other kid who's fighting it. And it's kind of like that clash. It's like this horror movie version of the future of a successful yet horrible business person's family. And by the way, it's not spoon fed to you as we're doing it here. Like, you can just enjoy this as a horror movie, you know, straight up like an Evil Dead movie of, like, fuck, we can't leave. And one by one, we get either killed or turned into a demon. Like, this movie has good,
it's a great horror movie.
It's a great horror movie, but it has, like, good, I don't want to say demon logic, but sometimes when it's demons, it's like demons can do anything, but it didn't kind of, like, hit that too hard. It didn't go to the well too many times to kind of, like, keep changing.
How like Possession of Hannah Grace changed the possession rules every 30 seconds.
Yeah exactly. To this one, I mean, whatever the rules really are, it's not really expressed, but, like, you never at one point feel like, oh, well, of course it's a demon, so they can do anything, which, I mean, technically they can. I mean, you know, Evil Dead was usually really good at that. I mean, those first two are excellent at, like, making these demon possession, demon outside sort of movies where occasionally a person becomes a demon now. And this movie, the Sam Raimi influence is pretty heavy on this one in the best way possible. Yeah, Dragon Man of Hell meets Evil Dead is a great way.
I just always want more Raimi horror because no one makes horror like he does. Apparently this guy does. But it's just rare because I can't even describe, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, it's definitely horror and it's definitely scary, but it also has that, like, goofy tone. Like, I don't know. Sam Raimi's really the only guy besides this filmmaker here that pulls it off well. And I always want more from that, whatever, if you call it a subgenre. I'm always looking for shit like that.
Yeah, there's plenty of moments that are like, like the Sam Raimi style, I figure, is, like, hitting you with, like, intensity, like you know, there's that part where like she's trying to drag the kid into the basement and they like stab her in the head, like fighting with her, and it's just crazy. It's go boom, 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 boom.
The hammer. Yeah.
They're right in the head, and then it's just like she's like on her back, like just like seemingly dead, and it's just all this craziness, like it's good quiet, and, like slowly zooms into her head, and like it just takes a beat longer for her to kind of come back and just start screaming it back in. That's fucking Raimi to a T, dude.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Or the part you said before where it's like it's you think one of the women who's like possessed and then just like going crazy and then like just grabs his face and rips it open, and she's like almost like she was wearing that face as a mask. It's just like there's no shortage of like awesome shit. It's not, it's demons and it's scary, but it's not like sad or depressing. It's still kind of funny, or at least very exciting.
It's exciting. It never lost my interest. I really loved it.
Yeah, I was able to stick with it the whole time. So I think this is a new flesh recommendation.
Yeah, and I think
May the Devil Take You.
Should watch Pooka too if it sounded interesting. It's worth your time for a Christmassy thing, but definitely watch May the Devil Take You immediately. And if you somehow missed the episode where we gushed about the other, I think that movie's Indonesian, isn't it? The Night Comes for Us, the violent one. The fighting movie.
Oh, yes.
That's another one of my favorite movies of the year that you should watch.
Is that also in
Netflix?
In the
I think so. Yeah. They're crushing it. Crushing it over there. All right. We have to end this episode because my podcast or my laptop has 2% left. And
right,
I'm not
right, right,
near
right.
a charger.
Okay. We'll be back with something next week.
Yeah. Next week, we'll be back with Lars von Trier's The House That Jack Built.
Ooh, and also the Corpse of Anna Fritz, which is now on Shudder.
Yeah, Corpse of Anna Fritz is now a curator's choice on Shudder. It's from 2015, but I had never seen it. We're going to talk about that. We might talk about a movie from Bridie Elliott, Chris Elliott's daughter, Clara's Ghost. Yes, yes. I'll watch that. Oh, and I did see the new Karen Kusama movie. I didn't have time to talk about it, but we'll talk about it next week. I've seen Nicole Kidman's Destroyer.
Oh, great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll see you next week.
See you next week, everyone. Bye.
Not with the new flesh.
I've learned that death is not the end of the new flesh.
Not with the new flesh.
I was hoping you'd be back.